Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show, and thank you for joining with us and taking your time out of your day to hear our thoughts, and sometimes you will agree with us, sometimes you won't. Again, we're from CCTA, Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Ben Monachino.
State Senator Bob Brinson.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
And as you heard, State Senator Bob Brinson is with us. I think we have just, Bob, we just released the budget, or you threw the budget over the wall to the House.
That is correct.
And you showed us with impact the size of the budget. I think, are you sitting on it?
It looks about 4 inches thick.
Well, I pushed it to the side, but the budget bill itself is about 460 pages. And then the actual accounting and the charts that go with it are another 660 pages. So it's about 1,000, a little over. So yeah, big hefty chunk.
And how many days did you have to read it?
I got it on Monday afternoon and had till Thursday when we actually voted on it. And the way that they actually put the budget together is the appropriations committees put their sections of the budget together. And so really you're only pay attention to your section until they actually put it the whole thing together. And then that's when they present it to the caucus and to the Democrats, for that matter, on that Monday afternoon.
Now, just quick background, Bob, to refresh everybody, the audience. Again, the budget is presented every other year.
It's a two-year budget.
Two-year budget. Mm-hmm. And alternating times, it's initiated either by the House or by the Senate.
That's correct.
And this cycle, it's being presented by the Senate.
It's being presented by the Senate. And so our goal really was to get the Senate budget put together by Good Friday in order to vote on it, get it to the House, and take essentially what's an Easter break. And so there's nobody in Raleigh right now. The House and the Senate both adjourned, actually, and took about 10 days. To come back. So that was the goal. We met the goal. It is a rather austere budget, and I can talk a little bit about that. The increase is only about 4% over last year's budget, and then the second year of the budget is only like 3.3% increase. And so that's the very top lines of that. One of the things that is interesting in there, too, is we went ahead and said we're going to meet the individual tax goals. And so we're reducing the taxes. As you know, right now, it's about 4.25, I believe, and then it's going to go down to 399 and then 349. We went ahead and said we're going to meet those goals. And
now that tax is, you're talking the
individual income tax.
Income tax, yes.
And so, and then we added three more triggers in there to take it from that between 2029 and 2036. If we meet the triggers, there are three more drops, and by 2036, it would go to 1.99. So a significant change and a significant goal to individual taxes.
That's going to make North Carolina a target or goal for people looking for low taxes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that has contributed to much of our growth already. I mean, as you know, last year, our state grew by about 1%, 1.3%. We are on track to get very close to 11 million people by the end of this year.
Wow.
And so I think with that, we will become the seventh most populous state in our union. And so, as you know, that translates to
Political power
and more congressional seats when that comes around. So,
Bob, how about small business taxes? Because I think North Carolina now is up at the top in attracting businesses.
That's true.
And is that reflected in this budget?
We did not change any of the corporate taxes. The goal is to get to 0%, I think, in another 5 years, so it does. One of the things we did address was the franchise tax, which is the taxes that businesses pay basically on their... within their company, what they have. We've reduced those a bit, and eventually we'd like to get down to zero for those as well. But yes, that's why North Carolina, the last 3 years, we were number one the last 2 years, and then Virginia caught up with us and pushed us to number two. But that's why many businesses are coming. That's why many people are coming, because we have a very advantageous tax environment and a lower cost of living.
When we got ready to retire, we took a very good look at Delaware. First of all, if you live in New England, you think Delaware is south. That was the first part. But Delaware does not have a state income tax, and they don't have a sales tax. And, you know, the tax...
But they had Joe Biden.
Well, that was unfortunate. But the tax situation there looked very good for retirement.
Yes.
And North Carolina is now rivaling that.
Right, right. And that's, if you go back, you got to look at the entire tax picture, because all of the states have state governments and have to pay for services somehow. And so, especially when you look at states that have no state income tax, either their sales tax is high or their property tax is high, or a combination of both.
Or DuPont pays for the state, which is what happens, and the companies that incorporate in Delaware.
Right.
That's where their revenue comes from.
Yep.
There's also recreation taxes that are assessed on the tourists.
Mm-hmm. Right, which is Florida.
Right.
And having lived in Texas, I can attest to their property taxes being high. So it's one of those, you've got to figure out your combination of taxes in order to provide the services that people want.
Yeah.
And so we have chosen to try and lower income taxes. And having said that, we've got to find revenue in other places. Now, right now, our growth, like we talked about, new businesses coming in, new people coming in, new housing being built, that is increasing. Even though we're lowering income taxes, there are more people paying income taxes. And then more development means more property taxes, more businesses mean more sales taxes. So right now, North Carolina is on a growth model.
Well, you're illustrating kind of the Laffer curve, which is when you lower taxes, you get more money.
Yes.
But you're doing it because of the people and the businesses coming in.
Exactly.
Also with that, the flip side of that is the growing pains of infrastructure.
Yes.
And I feel like us living here in New Bern, we're feeling that a lot, that we have areas that are not getting the city services. There's satellite communities that are in the city, and then there's county things. Some of the schools are overcrowded. Some of the schools don't have a full population. So, you know, there's growing pains of infrastructure as well.
Yeah.
I just want to add on to what you just brought up. I was going to bring it up also. So with all the new businesses coming in and people coming in, as you just said, I know you're on the Transportation Committee, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So how are we preparing ourselves for all this incoming traffic, trucking especially?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great dilemma. The 2 years ago, we actually went ahead and are taking some of the sales tax and diverting it directly to NCDOT because the gas tax wasn't keeping up, because more folks are going to EVs and are not buying as much gas. And so even though we increased the annual registration for EVs in order to compensate for that, in order to make up for it, we also had to increase the sales tax, which you going a portion of the sales tax going to NCDOT. And you bring up a great point. And one of the points of contention that I had about this budget, and particularly of interest for our area, is there are ferry tolls in this budget. And Senator Hennig, you know, put forth an amendment to take that out. And Senator Sanderson, myself, and Senator Hennig were the only ones that voted, only Republicans that voted for that amendment. And Senator Hennig himself ended up not voting for the budget for that reason. The argument from the others is that, well, we've at least got to generate enough income from the tolls in order to replace the ferries. The ferries on average are like 30 to 40 years old, at least from my understanding. But, you know, and there, folks in the Charlotte and Raleigh area are paying tolls on theirs. And it's like, but the difference is those are brand new roads, you know, and they're doing the tolls to pay for brand new roads. Here, you're assessing tolls on ferries that have been there for 40 and 50 years, and all of a sudden, you're now taking our lower-income counties, for that matter, and the median salaries in our counties are not as high as what is in Wake and Mecklenburg, and so you're adding what is essentially a tax on our folks that are here.
Senator Sanderson recently made the comment that when they asked for a bridge between Minnesot and Cherry Branch, the state said, no, it's too expensive to put a bridge there. We will put a ferry there, and there will never be a toll on that ferry.
Right.
Well, it looks like someone has forgotten that promise.
Right. And I am just hoping that is a negotiating tool, and the House will be the ones that will push back and take that out of there.
We have to find that in writing somewhere.
Well, I don't know what the breakdown is on use, but I keep hearing that it's the working person by and large uses that.
It is.
And they won't, they're probably least able to pay that addition. So I hope it gets changed.
And I have seen school buses on those ferries.
Right. Well, the school buses were going to be exempt. But to your point, the folks in Pamlico County are trying to get across the Neuse River there to work at Cherry Point. And then in Beaufort County, my other part, they're trying to get across the Tar River and into Nutrien to work at that plant. So these are working ferries.
Right. And somewhere they need to factor in how many employees will it take to collect those tolls, if those are ever allowed.
Yep.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam full of firearms, new guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, East 70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than East 70 Pond. Of course, East 70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. East 70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Bob, we're going to continue with your analysis of the budget before you.
No, absolutely. We were talking before the break about the ferries, and in the budget, they're expecting to take in about $7 million gross, which is nowhere near a new ferry. It would be many years before we get one. But the other thing is, and I want to get my hands on this study, but I was told institutional knowledge people that there was a study done that in order to implement the taken in tolls, it actually would be a whole lot more than $7 million. So we'd actually be losing money implementing it. But like I said, that's what I've been told, but I want to get a hold of that study.
Well, that does make a certain amount of sense, because you've got to set up a whole toll collection infrastructure to collect them. And again, I hope we can find the written promise that there would never be tolls on that ferry.
Right. Because I think there's what, 9 ferries? I know I have 2 in my district, but they run, you know, all the way from Elizabeth City all the way down to Wilmington. So,
and
you know, they're all
there
over
are other
the place.
Ones. There's a ferry that goes from I'm using this as an example, from Swan Quarter to Okeechobee. And there's a toll on that ferry. But it's a 2.5-hour ferry ride, and it has internet. And I don't mind paying a small toll on that ferry. I really don't. But this little half-hour ride across the Neuse, to me, uh-uh.
22 minutes.
And the other thing I've been told, it's like, well, you know, why don't you just tax the tourists? Well, in North Carolina Constitution, it's unconstitutional. So what they've put in the budget is $150 annual fee, annual pass for residents, and it's basically per vehicle. So that's what they've tried to do. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 7 ferries in here, 8. 8 ferries listed in the budget. So, but moving on, unless we're done with the ferries,
yeah.
Moving on to something else, what I wanted to talk about, what I get hit up a lot about is, you know, what about our state employees and the salary increases? You know, what are they going to get? In this Senate version of the budget, most state employees are going to receive a 1.25% raise across the board, but they'll also get a $3,000 bonus across the biennium. So basically 1.25 you'll get forever, but the $3,000 bonus you'll get across the 2 years. Specifically, correctional officers will get an additional 5.25% raise for a total of 8.9%, including their step increases. Probation and probation and parole officers will get 6.9% increases. State law enforcement officers, state capitol police, law enforcement in Division of Marine Fisheries, Forestry, Parks, Wildlife, they will get a 6.5% raise. SBI and ALE will get a 14.4% raise, and State Highway Patrol will get 9.2% raise. That's essentially what we're talking about in the state version, or Senate version of the budget.
Bubba, state employees, part of a union? Is it unionized?
I don't think so. We are a right to work state, and so I don't think we have a union. There is a organization that acts like a union for the teachers, but I don't think we have that for our state government employees.
What about retired state employees?
Right now, there is no COLA increase for retired state employees. However, this Senate budget does fully fund the state retirement plan, so that there is enough money in the state retirement plan to continue to pay out the retirements of those that have retired, unlike the National Social Security.
Medical costs for state employees. I know that we're a high medical cost state.
Right.
Is there efforts being done to try to bring that under control?
Well, that's absolutely. There's a couple of bills that the Senate has passed, basically a bill, Senate Bill 24, government mandates increase healthcare costs. There's a full list of mandates that the state has for insurance companies to cover. Basically, what this bill does is, if you want to mandate another coverage, you're going to have to delete one that's already there. That is SB 24. Bringing up, you know, healthcare costs, there is a bill in, we did pass another bill, Senate Bill 316, which was lower healthcare costs. It eliminated certificate of needs for rehabilitation services, rehabilitation facilities, and rehabilitation beds. And my understanding is also long-term care facilities. It also prohibits facility fees from being charged in many circumstances, and it requires healthcare facilities to give you a good faith estimate on the services that you're getting. And unless you get a line item bill provided, then they can't send it to collections either. So those are two bills that have passed the Senate. In the state budget, Senate budget, our version of it, it completely eliminates certificate of need statewide. So that's one of the things that is in there. So getting to some of the healthcare issues.
Wow. Now that certificate of need is a long time coming. I hope that it
exactly,
survives.
Exactly.
I hope it survives.
Now here's an interesting thing too. Some of you have talked about NC Innovation. It claws back the full $500 million that was appropriated to NC Innovation over the last biennium. What it does is it takes $400 million of that and applies it to a North Carolina Children's Hospital to be built in the Raleigh-Durham area. And then the $100 million that is left, we're actually going to appropriate $25 million each biennium back to NC Innovate. So instead of them sitting on the $500 million, we're going to give that to them like any other budgeted item.
What is NC Innovate? I'm sorry, I don't
know. Okay, and NC Innovation basically was the idea that this commission would look at our state universities and the things that they were doing research and development on, and trying to get those projects over the hump into commercial products and into companies to start producing
or manufacture,
whatever.
Yes.
Manufacture, produce. There was a lot of questions surrounding that. You know, was that an appropriate use of money? Are we actually, you know, 2 years in getting a return on our investment?
Sounds like a public-private partnership.
It was, the intention was to be a public-private partnership. And so to get over those concerns, the $500 million has now been taken back and we'll appropriate $100 million back over the next 4 years, $25 million a year.
Does this involve the creation of like a technical incubation labs to start up a business based on some creative technology, and you want to nurture it and get it into a final product?
I not in that sense. My understanding is this is the R&D and the studies and the research that universities were already doing that may have had a commercial application, but they weren't getting enough grants and enough funding to get it to a point where a company could take it over. And so this was, it is an incubation in a sense, that it's, but not to incubate companies. It was to incubate the technology to pass on.
Right.
To me, it feels like it wasn't self-sustaining. And I know some things you have to give it some money up front, but I hope our General Assembly takes a good hard look at that long term. Is it where we want to put any money? And I see that's where you're going.
And that's why the clawback of the
I would roll the calendar back a number of years. I guess like when Wilmington was given a special tax break for the motion picture industry, and
Corporate welfare.
That's the bottom line. Corporate welfare.
Right. The last thing I guess I'll talk about is teacher raises, because that's usually what the discussion ends up at. Basically, teachers will receive an average of 2.3% pay increase in next year, and an average of 3.3% increase over the biennium, plus the $3,000 bonus. So they'll still get the $3,000 bonus. That basically puts the starting teacher salary, I know people like to talk about starting teacher salary, at $41,000 for 10 months of work, but benefits do continue 12 months. So you do get 12 months worth of health care, but 10 months worth of salary. But I do want to point out that no starting teacher gets $41,000, because you have both a state supplement and a local supplement. For example, Craven County, the average state supplement is $2,400, and the local supplement is $5,300. So we're talking in the county of Craven, $7,700 on top of the $41,000.
And that doesn't include the benefit package that they get.
That doesn't include the benefit. This is just base salary.
Sounds like a good salary to me.
Sounds pretty good. And so that's where we are, you know, plus the $3,000 that we're talking about. There are other things in here. The advanced teacher roles are funded for those counties that are already in that program. That's a bonus for teachers. And it also extends the teacher apprentice program.
Does it pay more if you have a master's degree?
No.
Okay.
No master's supplement.
Okay.
Now, the question is, this is teachers' pay, and we are aware that there's so many more administrators and counselors than there are teachers, I mean, relative to what we grew up with. I just want to add that thing, because that's the teaser. We'll be back in a few minutes. This is the CCTA wake-up call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We're going to go right back to the budget or its accessories. Bob?
Yeah, I had mentioned Craven County and what the expected supplement would be for teachers' salaries, so I wanted to mention a couple of other counties in our listening area, just so that you know I have not forgotten about you, and you are important to me. So Beaufort County expected is $5,400. Carteret County's $5,100. Like I said, Craven, $7,700. Lenoir County, $6,700. Pamlico County is about $8,900. Jones County is about $7,500. So that's kind of where we at least think the teacher salaries and their supplements are going. We did have a little bit of discussion in the break about the Department of Education at the federal level and how President Trump has promised to pass that money on to the states, and how would that affect the state budget. Well, my understanding is the programs that the Department of Education actually fund are for our educationally challenged students, our intellectually challenged students, those programs. And so the money will come directly from Congress to the state and DPI. What I do want to impress upon you is even if the Department of Education was to close, the money for the school lunch programs, either reduced or free, comes through the Department of Agriculture at the federal level. So that doesn't even come through Department of Education. So really, with those programs and those departments shutting down, if they do, they really were program specific and program funded, and that money will come to the states. It essentially eliminates the middleman, eliminates the strings associated with those fundings, and you know the positions themselves and the infrastructure. My assumption is that money won't go to the states; it'll actually go back to reducing our annual debt.
Thanks for answering deficit. My question. I'm apparently the only one at the table that thought that maybe it would go to teacher salaries. Silly me.
But a couple of bills I wanted to talk about that the Senate has passed, and this is a good education point. So the Senate has been focusing on the budget. And so while our bill filing deadline has passed, we haven't been focusing that much on getting bills passed and on to the House. The crossover deadline is May 8th. And as I said, you know, both chambers are on a break this week. So we only have two legislative weeks until the crossover deadline. Essentially, if your bill doesn't make the deadline, you got to wait until the next biennium, another 2 years before you can try again. The House has been busy. They've been passing all kinds of bills and sending them over to the Senate. And like I said, the ones that we have passed and the ones the House have passed, we probably won't take those up until after the May 8th deadline so that we can get our business done. But I did want to talk about a few of them that we have passed just to be educational here. Senate Bill 153 back in March is the North Carolina Border Protection Act. We're, as you recall, last year we passed that sheriffs will cooperate with ICE. This bill, Senate Bill 153, will require the state level agencies, DPS, Department of Adult Correction, State Highway Patrol, SBI, that they will now enter into memorandums of agreement with ICE and cooperate with them. It also requires the Office of State Budget Management to examine what state public benefit programs were giving benefits to unauthorized aliens in the state of North Carolina. So we'll look for that to come back. And then if there are sanctuary cities out there or sanctuary counties in the state of North Carolina, it would waive governmental immunity. So if something happens where an unauthorized alien commits a crime against a person or a property, then the victim can now sue that municipality for damages.
With what you said about the accountability and going to ICE and the immigration, education is an area that we are educating a lot of illegals' children, and I didn't hear that mentioned. Is there any avenue to look at that? It's again, the taxpayer dollar. And in Craven County, we are paying extra teachers and tutors for English as a second language to illegals. And I don't think that that's fair.
Well, there's a staff position at Central that is focused on that.
Totally understand that. And we probably need to define public benefits programs better. I mean, you know, I guess the intent there was welfare and Medicare, Medicaid, but certainly it's much wider.
Mm. When I brought the topic up to the Board of Education years ago, I was told that it was a constitutional issue because in North Carolina's constitution states that every child is entitled to an education. And I would argue that that's every citizen child. You know, our constitution was not written for other countries. It was written for us.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a constitutional amendment we need.
Sounds like something's going to have to go to the Supreme Court.
Because uh-huh. We can amend our Constitution. A couple other things. Senate Bill 58 restricts the Attorney General from challenging presidential executive orders. I've received phone calls and emails about that one. So that passed the Senate. There are two different eliminating DEI bills. 227 eliminates DEI in public education, and Senate Bill 558 eliminates DEI in public higher education, which is our colleges and universities, to include our community colleges.
Now, quick question on how that's written, because we saw this with Common Core, where rather than eliminating it, they just renamed it. And
Right. We've
seen that, and hopefully this is something to...
In both of those bills, I do not have those bills in front of me, but both of those bills, it spells out discriminatory practices and divisive concepts. It actually defines those. Doesn't define DEI, that's kind of the catchphrase, but it defines the divisive concepts in both of those bills and says, this is not what we're wanting.
Well, so SEL, social emotional learning, was another one of the acronyms that was hidden in the culture. So I'm glad that you've got that.
Yeah, I didn't bring that bill to read some of those concepts for you, but they are spelled out very well as we discuss them in debates in both in the committee and on the floor.
So is there any teeth in these bills where if you identify a teacher who is going against some of those statements as an individual teacher, not the school or the school system, but an individual teacher, is there recourse?
I'm trying to remember because we passed both of those back in March. I think this really was at the top level where the administrators and the Board of Governors were scrubbing their curriculum to get rid of their curriculum, to get rid of the offices. If there was a teacher, they obviously would get reported. I don't recall if there's specific penalties in there. I'd have to go back and look at that bill, but I don't think that level of detail was addressed. It was really a more top level in both instances.
Well, the reason I ask is because in the past, like when we passed the Founding Principles Act, it was mandated that the kids would have a certain level, number of credit hours.
Right.
But it's never been enforced, and there were no teeth in the bill. I mean, it's like, yeah, you're supposed to, but if you don't, oh well.
Right, and that goes back to the Board of Governors enforcing it at the UNC Board of Governors.
Yeah.
Because these would only apply to our public universities.
Okay.
I'm just thinking this kind of goes to, is there any way to ensure that this bill is being enforced or a compliance mechanism within the counties or the schools, et cetera, and who might be the one, the principal of that school? Or is there some regulatory body within the state that oversees that? I'm just thinking because you brought up a good point. Who's checking to make sure there's compliance?
I think how that would likely go, which isn't stacked well for us, is that it's a school policy level,
right,
where administrators at the school can hold people accountable. The issue being that there's this state school board, North Carolina State School Board, which is the quasi-union, is who we bounce everything off of for making policy. So it's not going to be a great tool to get this really worked through down to the teacher classroom level, to the classroom.
Yeah, and I remember the K through 12, the DPI does have to certify annually that they don't have any of these concepts. So it goes back to exactly, who's holding that office, and those boards are, of course, governor appointed that we're talking about.
Because I think I saw or heard, maybe it was on TV or something I've read, where a lot of institutions are fudging and calling this DEI thing something else as a way to show, See, we're complying. But in effect, they're just carrying out what they've always been doing and ignoring what has come out of the administration.
Right. And that's where I think we had definitely have a friend in the auditor. And while we have loaded up his plate, it'll be a while before he gets to auditing DPI. He's working on DMV right now. But the Senate passed Senate Bill 474, the DAVE Act, and the DAVE Act is also in the Senate budget, so we're taking it both directions. But essentially what that does is no later than the 1st of October, every state agency will be required to report an explanation of how the agency or the division or the office within that agency utilizes public monies to execute its powers and duties under law. And then no later than December 31st, the auditor will report the results to the General Assembly, including recommendations, any state agencies, divisions, or offices that should be dissolved, or any state agency positions that should be eliminated based on his assessment. So it doesn't give the auditor the authority to do any of that, but reports to the General Assembly so that we can act on it.
Great. Very good. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back, and again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, you're taking over right now.
Well, since we're talking about North Carolina, I just wanted to mention the latest development in the case involving vote counting in the Griffin Supreme Court justice case. Because, first of all, the case came back from the feds. It went to the state Supreme Court. They said we were going to give the 65,000 time to cure their ballots. Then they changed that and said out of that, 60,000 wouldn't have to cure their ballots. And now it's gone back to federal court, and the federal court put a kibosh, a stay on the whole thing with the curing the ballots. So This is getting ridiculous. It's just bouncing back and forth between those two courts, and everyone takes another swipe at it. At issue is 734 votes. So if you don't have to cure 60 of the 65,000, we got 5,000 votes out there. Now, I understand some of the votes are not to be counted because they didn't give any identifying information. So I don't know how you get hold of those people to cure their ballot, but.
Well, let's talk about, there's actually three categories of voters that we're talking about in the lawsuit. So the first one is the 60,000 that you're talking about that either has, is missing either driver's license or the
Social Security
number, which was required.
Right.
And which the Board of Elections messed up and they won't take it. So that basically, the appeals court said, we're going to give them 15 days to cure those ballots. The Supreme Court said, no, don't worry about it. We're going to count those ballots. Okay. So those are out. The other two categories, one of them is never North Carolinaers, I guess.
Yeah,
I
could, never lived in North Carolina.
Never lived in North Carolina. Essentially, the both the appeals court and the state Supreme Court said they're going to throw those votes out.
Okay.
They're
Do you
not going to count them
there
at
are?
All.
About 1,500?
It was a low number.
Yeah, it was like 500. It was a low number.
Yeah. And so those are thrown out. So those are still in dispute, basically, with the feds. The ones that you're talking about, and this is where it gets really confusing, is the military and overseas ballots. Because, you know, as we have mentioned many times, North Carolina has a voter ID law. The Board of Elections said, well, we're not going to require a voter ID for these military and overseas ballots. Well, in the lawsuit, the only information that Jefferson Griffin was able to glean was, I believe, from Durham County. And so he initially filed suit with the Durham County Okawa ballots, which was about 1,500. Later, he was able to get three other predominantly Democrat counties, I'll admit that. And so that's why sometimes they talk about 1,500 ballots and sometimes they talk about 5,000 ballots, because it depends on whether you're talking about one county or four counties. What the Supreme Court essentially said, the appeals court or the North Carolina appeals court said, we're going to give them 15 days to cure those ballots. The Supreme Court said, we're going to give them 30 days to cure those ballots. And then that's what the federal court has put a stay on the whole thing.
So ridiculous.
That's to try and give, because it's a lot more complicated than people give it credit for, the three different categories and the three different courts making three different decisions.
What grounds is the stay on? They have to say why they're staying.
Well, because they want more information. They did not want the State Board of Elections to start pulling ballots, start curing ballots without having heard the case. That was my understanding.
Wouldn't it have made more sense if they just followed the law in the beginning?
Absolutely.
And what penalties will that board
absolutely
be held to?
Because they didn't follow the law.
Yes.
Well, it goes back to, you know, the General Assembly last year is moving passed a law and overrode the governor's veto to move the Board of Elections underneath the auditor. But of course, that's in court also, even though their appointments should start on May 1st. So that's got to be adjudicated. But the penalty in my mind is we take that away from the governor and the auditor gets to reappoint all those people or appoint new people.
It was my understanding that the Board of Elections of the state was made aware of the problems with these voter registrations prior to the election. So to me, that shows some intent of fraud.
They changed the form.
Yep.
But they didn't go back and correct all those ballots, which is an excellent point. I want to commend the chairman of the Beaufort County Republican Party, Carolyn Garris. She got a list of those 60,000 voters. I said, the Republicans in, and I realize CCTA is nonpartisan, but I am talking about the Republican chair. She got a list of the Republicans that were on that disputed ballot list in her county, and I'm already telling them, you've got to fix your registration because this is still going to be an issue in the next election. And so we need to be proactive and go back and look at these people and let them know that, hey, your ballot's in dispute. It may not be in dispute anymore, but if you don't fix it, it will be again. So I think we need to be proactive.
Okay, Pat, you want to take us in another direction? We got about 6 minutes left.
Well, we could talk about Kilmar. The due process Maryland dad, the Democrats have chosen, the Republicans are making fun of the Democrats that went down to El Salvador by calling them the MS-13 caucus.
Yes.
And they had vowed, at least one of them had vowed to stay down there until he was released, but she's back already. They all four came back. They didn't get to see him because they weren't official, and they weren't official because James Comer, Republican, said, I'm not paying 1 cent of our money.
Transport.
You want to go down there, you go on your own dime.
But they did get margaritas.
The thing that bothers me.
No, not the four.
Really bothers me about this. They are so concerned about Kilmar Garcia's constitutional rights and civil rights. He came into the country illegally. Where were they when the January 6th people were denied their civil rights?
Due process.
Yeah, where were they when
and those are citizens, and Kilmar is not a citizen.
And the same for the ACLU, because the ACLU's gotten involved in this. Where were they on the January 6th people?
In addition, the mothers of some of the people who have been injured, raped, or murdered by illegals, specifically in that person's territory,
Maryland.
Yeah. didn't even bother to contact the parents, so evidently cares more about the criminal than the victim.
Hmm.
That makes zero sense.
If you go back to how this thing all kind of laid out, He's here illegally. That's number one, he's breaking the law there. While here, he becomes allegedly a member of MS-13. However, a lot of evidence was gathered by the administration and those in ICE and law enforcement, sheriffs, et cetera, who provided enough evidence to convince two separate judges, one an immigration judge and one
an appeals judge.
And they both found upon the evidence that he is an MS-13 gang member. You take it from there, he was ordered to be deported, but of course, under the Biden administration, he was allowed to just hang around for another 5-8 years or so. And in the meantime, he gets married, but the only stipulation to the deportation was he cannot be returned to El Salvador because he claims the rival gangs will get him. Okay, fine, but you're going to be deported. He was ordered to be deported. At that point, he was given so much due process. What more is needed?
Well, they're playing the long game because they're attacking the Alien Enemies Act, where you can expel them en masse. They came in en masse. We want to expel them en masse. The Democrats want each one to have a hearing and a year of appeal.
So we need 200 years to get that accomplished.
Right. So they're playing the long game.
And he was also picked up in Tennessee and suspected of human trafficking.
Yeah,
is this what we want in our country?
Add that to all the other issues.
Yeah, is this what we want in our country?
The point remains, why is the government more interested in the criminal element than the victims?
Yeah.
Well, the government isn't.
Democrats. Well, Democrats.
The Democrats are.
I'm being nonpartisan.
Because Trump is fighting him as hard as he can.
You're right.
And that judge that's trying to do discovery, she's banging her little teeny fist in a fury on her bench because they're not answering the discovery questions to her liking about where is he, what have you done to bring him back, and your answers are not answering the interrogatories.
Now, Pat, as a lawyer, isn't there something about this act, this
alien act.
Yeah, that it's not supposed to be subject to judicial.
That's right. It's not supposed to be subject to judicial review. It's right in the act.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's a presidential decision.
Yes, it's a presidential decision. Once he invokes an invasion, then he can use this act. Well, he's done his part. And he's trying to use the act. And we have three different courts reviewing the act, including our U.S. Supreme Court. And when the answer should have been, it says it's not reviewable, end of story, Mr. Trump, carry on.
Is anybody else concerned that seems like all of a sudden the courts have more authority than the executive
officer? That's a problem.
That's scary to me. If the courts, and you get small district courts in states that are overruling presidential orders, I don't understand.
Well, they're making laws.
Yeah. I don't understand how a court has authority over the president's
decisions. Well, we're supposed to wait for the U.S. Supreme Court to make their move and declare that nationwide injunctions are no longer to be tolerated. But the Supreme Court, under John Roberts, who's so concerned about his legacy, is dragging his feet.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. That's part of the problem here. The decisions that have come down have been kind of vague. Maybe they're waiting for the right case to summarize all this. But isn't there a legislation that was put forward by, is it Speaker Johnson or Comer, Representative Comer, to restrict the power of these lower federal district courts to issue injunctions that are nationwide?
Yeah, there is legislation circulating, yes. Yeah. Rogue judges.
But yet we're still under what's the bit that we didn't turn the planes around?
Yeah, that's Judge Zinnes.
Yeah, we're still threatened with that.
Because Boasberg had to finally bow out.
Well, he got caught. He had so many conflicts of interest.
Yeah, but that's not the reason.
Why'd he bow out?
Because the Supreme Court told him he didn't have any jurisdiction. Because
oh, so
the prisoners were in Texas, and they filed in his venue. They said, that's the wrong venue. You have no jurisdiction. So when the ACLU came back again, he said, I'm sorry, but there's nothing I can do for you.
And I'm glad at least that happened once.
Yes.
Once.
It needs to happen a lot more.
That's the end of the show. That's all that we can take for today. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for listening.